through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
If you guys are not following these guys, not listening to their podcast, I don't know what you're doing. It's the men and women's tourneys. You need to be caught up. You need to be listening for these previews and great interviews. It's Fox Sports' Mark Titus and Tate Frazier on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, hosts of the Titus and Tate podcast. Now, we have both of you guys. This is such a pleasant surprise. How are you guys?
We're doing great. This is exciting times for both of us to appear. This is rare. I don't know if there's enough oxygen for all of us to talk at the same time.
I'm excited. We're trying to wedge ourselves in with the Pacific Northwest while Gonzaga's taking over the basketball world.
You guys are trying to jump on that wave and let you get on that surfboard and ride it, Mike.
I'll allow it. You know, I know Gonzaga isn't in the Pac-12 clearly, but I did appreciate you guys giving Andy Katz a hard time about the blatant Pac-12 disrespect.
Well, thank you, Stacey.
You're welcome.
For us, Gonzaga is in the Pac-12 because I think the thing about the Pac-12 is that it's not so much the conference as it is just the West Coast in general.
Right.
Yeah. It's an idea.
It's a vibe.
Yeah. And in general, I think there needs to be more respect put on the entire West Coast basketball scene. So even though Gonzaga doesn't play in the Pac-12, we throw it all together and we're like, hey, East Coast, why don't you stay up past 10 o'clock for once in your life and watch some good basketball here?
I would bet that there are analysts who think that the Zags are in the Pac-12. Like, I would still
probably
guess that they are.
Now, my favorite part about that, though, is you guys put Andy Katz's feet to the fire here, and he tried his best to kind of worm out of this and say, like,
I wasn't happy about it.
I wasn't alone. I'm not the only one here. Why are you guys picking on me? But can you guys walk us through this? Because you guys know this better than anybody. Of why is it that the Pac-12 doesn't get the respect, and we're seeing it here in the NCAA tournament, that they took a lot of people by surprise, but why do they get disrespected compared to the Big Ten, especially this season?
It does feel like it's one of those things where, you know, there is an East Coast bias, as Titus had mentioned, so there's a lot of, you know, Syracuse alums and journalists out in the world that refuse to acknowledge the Pac-12, and I also think there was this stigma that people believe that the Pac-12 did not have the players to compete with the Big Ten or a Big 12 or an ACC. We're so far removed from that being the reality. In fact, the Pac-12 may have some of the best collection of talent in the entire country. And this year was a strange year. Like, we played each other. We beat up on each other. A lot of conferences didn't cross-pollinate a lot. So we had to form opinions based on the play within the conference. And people already had a preconceived notion to disrespect the Pac-12. Every time that a good team lost to a quote-unquote bad team, we moved them to the middle. In the ACC, in the Big Ten, in the Big 12, we would shoot people up in the top 25. So it was, I think, a general consensus where the media just did not believe the Pac-12 was as quality as they should have been. And Titus and I are in L.A., so we watch UCLA, we watch USC, and we know they're good.
We do work with a pair of Syracuse alums, you guys.
I will say, too, that Pac-12 fans do themselves no favors by kind of feeding into it as well. Like, the Pac-12 fans Pac-12 fans in general believe that their programs are all terrible and their teams are all terrible.
Can confirm. I think
they're,
they're just as surprised by this. So we need some more confidence out of these Pac-12 fans. I got a buddy that's like an Arizona State fan, and all he does, the only time I ever hear from him is when Arizona State loses. When they win, he's like, it doesn't matter. We suck. We're never going to win anything. Who cares if we won today? And I'm like, we need some more positivity because the people back east, this is all they see. They don't stay up to watch the games. So they get a read on like the fan bases. And when every fan base thinks their team's not very good, they're going to believe it. So hopefully this will get people confident. Hopefully the Pac-12 and West Coast in general is back. And away we go next year, you know?
No doubt.
Curtis Rogers, producer on the board right now, also a big fan of your guys' show. He is a huge fan. He is a Wildcat alum, Arizona alum. And every time we talk about the Sun Devils, I want to make sure you can get a shout-out in, Curtis.
Well, Sun Devil hoops don't even register with me. I mean, that's just the most lopsided rivalry, air quotes, on the West Coast.
I just wait for you to call them the Scum Devils.
Well, that's what they are. I'll let you take it from here.
Now, let's talk about Zags a little bit. So I watched your guys' interview with Headband Corey Kispert, and I think that I liked the way that you guys, in your most recent podcast episode, you organized the Sweet 16 preview into tiers. So rather than just looking at games, it was like, hey, here's the team that needs to win it to have the season considered a success. Here's a team that needs to get to the Final Four. This team needs to get to the Elite Eight. And this team could lose, you know, Saturday. And this season was great. So you had one team as the team. Well, not sure if you bet Baylor there, but one team is the team that needs to win it all to be considered a successful season. And it was?
It was Gonzaga.
This is how
far we've come, right? Like we mean this in a, I think a lot of fans will hear that you have to win a title for this to be a success and that they'll kind of get nervous and they'll say, now hang on a second. That is kind of an unfair expectation. But I think most Gonzaga fans have to agree that this is number one, the reality. They're undefeated. They're by far the best team in the country. They're playing very, very well. This is the best Gonzaga team of all time. And from that perspective, that's why we're saying that, like, this is it. You've accomplished everything there is to accomplish as a program. Another Final Four is not going to move the needle nationally at this point. Gonzaga has to win a title and say we belong at the adult table with all the other awesome programs in the country. But also, I say that as a compliment, that, like, Gonzaga, how far they've come in such a short amount of time. It is the greatest rags to riches, or as Tate pointed out, zags to riches story in college basketball history. That 1995, this program made its first NCAA tournament, and now all of a sudden you have a chance to go undefeated, and people like Tate and I are saying you have to win a national title or else the season's a failure. Like, that's insane to say out loud, but it's a testament to Mark Few. It's a testament to the program. It's a testament to the fan base, honestly, because you can have a great coach. You can have some good players roll through, but if you don't have a fan base that's passionate about it, that's showing up night in and night out, that's showing up when, you know, you lose to Wichita State in the second round, a lot of other fan bases would say, all right, we're done. That's it. Or Adam Morrison loses to UCLA, and you're like, yeah, it was a fun ride. I guess I'm going to get off now. Gonzaga fans, to your credit, have been stuck through it, have been there for every step of this ride, and here's the hope, and you can see it through to the end, which, by the way, it's not even the end. This year's not even the end, because you're landing every five-star recruit in America, and next year you might even be better than this year. So
that's the part that is amazing to me, as you guys talk about that evolution, and it also is maddening at the same time, being here in Seattle, guys, where you have the Husky basketball program, who is probably in one of the more fertile recruiting backgrounds that you could possibly have, and they have never really been able to turn themselves into a serious contender and on a year in, year out basis. And you have guys like Lorenzo Romar, who was able to recruit but not win big. You have Mike Hopkins, who takes over, and everybody's excited about his year one, and now this program is just completely bottomed out. What is your guys' take on that, and is there anybody that you think could take over for Mike Hopkins eventually if they were to move on? I'm pounding the table, it happens now. That would make a ton of sense.
Yeah, I think it's an easy answer. The answer is Brandon Roy, and I think you bring Brandon Roy back.
You
say, here are the keys to the program, Brandon. Bring UW basketball back to the top. Take over the Pacific Northwest. Get Jamal Crawford in as an advisor. You know what I mean? Just lean into it. You're UW. Take over the state. Or at least that part of the state. Have Gonzaga be your Duke. You guys be North Carolina. I think Brandon Roy is the easy answer. I don't see why they don't go ahead and pull the trigger on that. I love Mike Hopkins, but send him back to Syracuse and let's get Brandon Roy going.
I thank you, because I was pounding the table for that yesterday. You just perfect.
We're ready to go, Jake.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Let's do this now.
It's got to be a shot to the heart, too, by the way, that I asked Corey Kispert when we had him on our show.
It hurt.
Yeah, and I was like, you grew up a Gonzaga fan, you know, growing up in Washington? And he's like, absolutely not.
He was like, it's UW for life.
I was a UW guy.
Gosh, it just hurts. Oof. It hurts so much. Now, one thing that we have to address, there's a huge elephant in the room that we haven't been able to address so far, and I want to make sure we get to it, is, Mark, you have one of the greatest montage videos of all time.
Oh, yeah.
That look, this is 11 years old, and it's only got 600,000 views. I think that's an absolute travesty. And I'm going to try and get this to resurface, because it's one of the greatest videos I've ever seen.
Well, I appreciate that. It was, I didn't realize it was 11 years old either. That makes me feel very old. So thank you for that as well.
You're very welcome.
I made that in college. It was like halfway through my senior year of college. And obviously it's supposed to be a little funny. And we tried to make it, you know, like to where you laugh maybe once or twice as you watch it. But honestly, in the back of my mind, the whole point of making Mr. Rainmaker was, when I'm old and gray, I can show it to my kids and just be, because I knew, like, I never played at Ohio State. I never got any minutes, so I had no highlights. So I was like, I need to have something that shows that I could play a little bit. And most of the shots in there are stupid and jokes, quote unquote. But I made sure to put in plenty of shots that were like, I could play a little bit. All right.
Yeah. They're good shots. Yeah.
No, you showed that.
Selling yourself short.
My favorite is you know, playing some great defense, being able to make an unbelievable steal and then shooting the three right after.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Walked all over that guy.
If only I would have got some minutes, I could have shown it in an actual game.
There's an important feud I want to get to. Now, before we have you guys go, I do want to ask you guys to pick at least one of the most likely upsets from this weekend's game. So that'll be the last question we ask. Before we do that, I have known one person in my life, my entire life, who doesn't like Jean Dolores Schmidt, a.k.a. Sister Jean, until now, until we brought you guys on. Mm. Why do you hate an innocent 101-year-old woman?
I want to get out ahead of this and say this is not me. This is Tate. So please direct that question to Tate. I will not be married to this.
Yes.
This is a Tate Frazier question. So Tate, go ahead. You take it.
Tate's like, I'll say it to her face.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, look, it has nothing to do with Sister Jean, right? You said, like, the person, I'm sure she's a lovely person. I'm sure she means well. Obviously, she loves the game of basketball. I like all this. But what I have to say is I hate Sister Meme, which is a totally different caricature, a totally different personality, and the person that takes away from someone like Cameron Krutwig, who dominates an Illinois team that I thought was going to win the championship, you know, in Indianapolis. And at the end of the game, I look at NCAA's, you know, their main March Madness page, and they have a picture of Sister Jean memed on to Thanos all the teams that she's beaten in the tournament. Okay. And like, for me, that makes me hate Sister Meme. It's not her fault. It is all of the NCAA social media accounts that build up the Sister Meme. I'm going to call her Lady Meme or Lady Jean. That's what Adam Miller on Illinois called her after the game. He said, dang, Lady Jean got us today.
Lady Jean.
But it's no hate. I promise it's no hate for her personally.
I would say, too, that to defend Tate, that I'm okay with people who love Sister Jean, and because it is a fun story, and it's cool that she prays with the team and she's 101 years old. Like, everything about it is awesome. I would just ask that people know the players. One player. Like, these guys, I just feel bad for the players that have spent their whole lives getting to this point. They are playing their hearts out. They're pulling off these upsets. And all anyone's talking about is how Sister Jean looks like Thanos in this Photoshop, you know? And like, we just feel bad for the players that are played, you know?
I completely understand. And it is bizarre that someone who doesn't play the game gets more clout than the players who are making the Cinderella run.
Imagine her being told in 1919, like, hey, when you're older, they're going to meme you onto a picture of Thanos. None of it makes sense now, but it's going to be great.
She's like, they're going to do what?
She's going to be like, what's the internet?
That's fantastic. I want to leave you guys with this one question here. Our producer Curtis Rogers, who gives us a three questions, we call it a segment, he gives us amazing questions every single day, but he has this one. I think I want to throw this one at you. At most, the Pac-12 can advance three teams to the Elite Eight this weekend, so will their magic continue or will it run out?
Well, I will say I like a Pac-12 team to win the USC Oregon game for sure. So I think they're going to get one.
I don't know. We'll see.
So then we're looking at the other two. So we got UCLA versus Alabama. Don't love that matchup, if I'm being honest. Alabama, we saw against Maryland, they hit 16 threes, I believe it was. They're unbelievable score. Like, when they get hot, they're really, really hard to stop. And we see that from a lot of teams in college basketball. The problem is these teams will sometimes have off nights and they have nothing to fall back on. Alabama is not a team like that. They play unbelievable defense. Their defense might be better than their offense. So do not love that matchup for UCLA. I mean, Oregon State, though, I like. I'm talking myself into Oregon State because that game is going to – I think Loyola is a better team. No disrespect to Sister Jean and the players who nobody knows, none of their names. But Loyola is very good. But Oregon State, that game to me is going to be very ugly. It's going to be in the 50s, both in the final score and like the era of basketball they're going to be playing, like the 1950s. So I see that coming down to the wire. Oregon State is the hottest team in the country in a lot of ways. No disrespect to Gonzaga, but that's how we have to operate as media people. We got to find like the team that's won like four in a row, and they're the hottest team. So I like Oregon State. Put me down for Oregon State pulling off the upset, and obviously USC, Oregon, whoever wins that's going to get. So I like two Pac-12 teams to make it.
Yeah, I like the idea of Sunday night being a Pac-12, you know, basically double feature. We're going to get the USC-Oregon game. We're going to get UCLA-Alabama. And I liked UCLA to make a run through the Elite Eight. Like Titus said, I don't like the matchup, but I'm still going to stick with UCLA. I'm still going to stick with Mick Cronin. I see that win there. Oregon State, I would like, but Sister Meme, she's in the bag of the NCAA. There's no way they're going to win that 1,000%. Game if the NCAA has something to do with it. So I'm going to take two as well. Unfortunately, I think Sister Meme moves
on. Did you guys see what we did there, by the way? That's a good little tip for you two as well. It's like whenever you get asked like that, one of you take the one side, one of you take the other. So that way
so your show's right no matter what. Yeah. They're going to be like, you guys, Titus and Tate, they called this. At the end of the day. Well, so do you want to mark
We're jotting down notes as you speak right now.
I am going to hold both of you to the same upset. I need you guys to agree on it. Teamwork.
Okay.
Head in the game. For the games this weekend, I'm assuming you're going to go with Oregon State, but maybe not. So you've got Villanova, Oral Roberts, Syracuse, and then
I like
obviously
Syracuse State. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Syracuse is the pick. Yeah, let's take Buddy Boeheim.
Yeah, Buddy Boeheim's playing as well as anybody in the country right now. There's that. Also, that 2-3 zone is like the knuckleball. I mean, this is not a unique observation, but I love that description. Whoever came up with that, kudos to them. That the 2-3 zone that Syracuse plays is like a knuckleball of college basketball. That when that thing's knuckling, it's impossible to score on, and it's impossible to figure out. Now the problem is, every so often, a knuckleball doesn't knuckle.
It just hangs.
It doesn't move. It just hangs in the air. And it gets smashed into smithereens. So that could happen against Houston. But I think Syracuse there's something about Syracuse when they're a double-digit seed. They just play better in the tournament. It's very bizarre. So maybe that's the one, Tate. Is that what we're locking in on?
Yeah, I think Syracuse is the pick. But I also will say Houston fans have really turned against us because Titus and I this entire season have been like, Houston's not as good as you think. And yet here they are in the Sweet 16. If they make it to the Elite Eight, we're going to have to keep doubling down. So there's a caveat of Houston probably blowing out cues that could come up.
Houston could be cutting down the nets. And I'd be like, I still don't think they're very good.
I think it was a weird year. It was a weird year.
Ride or die opinions. Ride or die opinions.
All right, you guys. They are Fox Sports' Mark Titus and Tate Frazier, hosts of the Titus and Tate podcast. You guys can watch their show live on YouTube and Fox Sports College Basketball Twitter account every night after the NCAA tourney games. Thank you guys so much. This was awesome.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
All right. Again, that was Fox Sports' Mark Titus and Tate Frazier. We got a couple more minutes here for some NFL headlines, Jake. Zach Wilson's pro day is being held today. John Lynch, one of the many in attendance at BYU's pro day to watch him.
Yes, he was. And when that first happened, you're like, wait, what? John Lynch? Why is he there?
Yeah, because that news was reported before the trade.
Exactly.
Well,
so
news of the trade.
Yeah, so everybody's like, okay, so you know, maybe John Lynch is just going out there doing his due diligence. He's got the 12th pick in the draft at the time. Could Zach Wilson slide all the way down to the 12th pick in this draft? I don't know about that. But then you get the immediate news that the 49ers trade up with the Miami Dolphins to get the number 3 overall selection. That really catches your eye and makes a lot of sense as to why Lynch would be there to witness Zach Wilson's pro day. Now, Zach Wilson's pro day went off beautifully. It went perfectly. Everybody's, you know, raving about it. And I think that sometimes when you look at these pro days for these higher level quarterbacks, to me, there's not really a whole lot you can get away, you can take away from these pro days. Mm-hmm. Unless someone was just catastrophically bad and inaccurate, I don't think you walk into a pro day with Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, Trey Lance, and Justin Fields for that matter, and think, yeah, they climbed up on my board after I watched their pro day. I just really would have a hard time seeing that evaluation and going, yep, he's my guy, or he's not my guy. I think that it's just confirmation of what you've seen on tape.
All right.
And so if that process is there, then I think that that's, you know, where it goes, and Zach Wilson already has been on, you know, everybody's, you know, top two or three.
Breaking here 2 minutes ago, Jake. The Seahawks have officially released former second-round pick Jaron Reed after being unable to trade him per source. Yesterday, we found out that Jaron Reed was going to be on the move, so no matter what, he was out of Seattle. It was going to be either via being released or trade. This news from Adam Schefter just now, the Seahawks have officially released the former second-round pick.
Mm. You know, this is really unfortunate. I'm bummed to see that Jaron Reed is not going to be with the Seahawks. I mean, there could be an outside chance that he sees the market. It's not favorable to him, and he returns to Seattle, but I don't think that this ended very well, where the relationship is strong. And I think Jaron Reed, just out of spite, would probably be willing to take, even if it was a couple million less, to go somewhere else and play for a year than to come back to Seattle. So I'm going to be bummed out to miss out on Jaron Reed, but it's not something where I feel like this takes the organization back, or this takes the defensive line group back a major step. Getting Carlos Dunlap was the priority, and if that meant that Jaron Reed had to walk, I'm okay with that, because Jaron Reed wasn't a massive disruptor in the middle of the defense on his own. He needed help. He needed pieces around him to get the most and to get the best out of him. And so I think that they can adequately find a replacement for Jaron Reed, and I think Puna Ford is going to get the opportunity to do just that.
The NFL will allow up to 10 team employees to work from their war rooms on draft night if they've received a COVID vaccine. Last time I checked, this was obviously before this kind of alteration to it where they said if you've received the COVID vaccine. Before, they were going to allow some employees to be in there socially distanced, although one of the rules for that was that you weren't, I think, going to be able to have food or drink or anything. Like, they wanted it to be very far away from each other, no shared food or whatever, which I completely understand. However, I don't know how you do any football or sporting event without food. Like, when I think of the draft, I just think of what food am I bringing to watch the draft?
Correct.
And the answer, at least right now, because this is what I'm craving in this moment, Jake, 3D Doritos, because you and Curtis were sharing some yesterday, and ooh, I really want some still.
Spicy ranch.
Cadbury eggs, because I'm seeing a lot of them at the store for Easter, and I can't wait to get my hands on some. And Oreos. And pizza.
It sounds pretty good. I mean, it sounds like this list is just going to continue
tenders.
To keep building.
And fish sticks.
But if you're one of those guys, I mean, that's a long time to be in the war room
a
and not be able
time.
To have
high stress.
Oof, man. No. I mean, I'd be chowing down on something for sure. So this is going to be a mental and physical test for everyone that's going to be going through this process. And they don't get to have their comfort food with them. That's a shame.
I don't like it. Leonard Fournette will be returning to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2021 on a one-year deal, which means that the Buccaneers have been able to bring back their Super Bowl squad. I don't like that. If you're in the NFC, you're looking around and you're saying, you know, one of the things that you can hopefully count on with a Super Bowl team is that guys go out and they get new deals. That didn't happen this year. Tampa Bay still in full force, and they're going to be the team to beat in the NFC. Obviously, Green Bay is going to be back in that conversation. Obviously, probably a couple teams from the NFC West going to be in that conversation. I don't know what's going to happen with the Saints now that Drew Brees has retired, but they still got a lot of talent. Either way, Tampa Bay right now is bringing back their Super Bowl squad.
They are, and I heard Danny O'Neill this morning. I think he's just got this crux against Tampa Bay. We all do it. We all pick a team that we don't like, and we're wishing ill against them. And mm-hmm. I think Danny is looking at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and saying, I don't want these guys to get back to the playoffs. I don't want them to be a Super Bowl contender. Therefore, I'm going to root against them. I think that with Tampa doing this, this sets themselves up pretty nicely to be able to win their division. I think they've got a great shot at just handily winning their division, giving them the changes going on within their division. And the other side of it as well is that they came together in the second half of the season. They came together through the playoffs. They had a lot of early struggles in their season. And if they can start off the way that they finished in the second half of the season, be on the same page offensively, all that, I think Tampa is going to be definitely a dangerous, dangerous team this next season. And it's not overhype. It's not, you know, just predicting because of last year's history. I think they've got a very legit chance to win it again.
Let's get back to that news breaking just a few minutes ago. According to ESPN's Adam Schefter, the Seattle Seahawks have released former second-round pick defensive tackle Jaron Reed. What's this defensive line going to look like without him, and what do the newest additions bring to the table? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
We knew it was going to happen, and it is now official. The Seahawks have released former second-round pick Jaron Reed after being unable to trade him. That from ESPN's Adam Schefter. So now we're looking at a Seahawks defensive line with a couple new additions, including two returning starters, and without one longtime starting defensive tackle. Now, they managed to retain Puna Ford, who was a restricted free agent, and so he stays with them. And then they've recently, today, signed Al Woods, so he'll also bolster the interior. Former first-round pick LJ Collier presumably could move inside, too. And then, Jake, you brought on Kerry Hyder, brought back Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayoa. How are you feeling about the pass rush?
Well, I'm feeling really good about the pass rush. Honestly, so good that I think this is the best depth that they've had in their pass rushing unit since 2013. And I got a flurry of texts going, well, what are you talking about, 2013? How can you say that? Well, don't be so close-minded about it. I know that we immortalized that year, and it was a special group with Chris Clements and Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. But when you look at the potential of what they have in their pass rush with Dunlap, with Benson Mayoa, you have Kerry Hyder, you have Daryl Taylor, who, if he comes in and is able to show flashes of what the Seahawks loved so much about him, you've got a really unique group, adding the flexibility of Puna Ford, LJ Collier. I think that it's a unique aspect of what this group can do. And don't forget about the fact that you've got a safety who had 9.5 sacks last year in Jamal Adams. You've got Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks, who are very, very good blitzing linebackers. So as a whole, their pass rush unit should be very, very good. And it should be a group that strikes fear into the rest of the NFL within their own division. I think that they can do some serious damage from the get-go. And they're finally entering 2021 after two seasons where it's been really up and down with the questions of their pass rush and the stability of their defensive line, Stacey. They finally have a group that has depth, good quality depth, and a group that from the beginning should be good rather than having to go into the middle of the season or just at the end of training camp and try to get a trade just to get their defensive line to respectability.
Now, what I'd still like to see is the development of the younger guys they have. Maybe LJ Collier moving to the inside is a perfect fit for him, and maybe that's finally where he kind of explodes onto the scene and has a breakout year. And I don't want to constantly compare Frank Clark's final season in Seattle to what, not Daryl Taylor, who hasn't played, but what Alton Robinson was able to do. Because if you look at his rookie season, Alton Robinson actually has one more sack and one more tackle for loss than did Frank Clark. Both had a forced fumble as well. So both had pretty promising rookie seasons. I think the tough thing is you look at Frank Clark's last season with 14 sacks and you say, where do you find that? And it feels like they haven't been able to. The closest they came was probably bringing in Jamal Adams and having him with 9.5. Or actually, did he finish with 10? Did he make
it? No, 9.5.
Nine and a half. Mm-hmm. So I'd still like to see development from those younger guys, but you have brought in Seattle a ton of insurance with Kerry Hyder and Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayoa, who had a really good season, had one more sack than Carlos Dunlap, in fact, with 6. I think what's interesting to me, I don't mean to disparage anyone, but I got to be really honest. I felt more nervous about Carlos Dunlap being released than I do right now about Jaron Reed being released.
Yeah, I firmly agree with you on that, because the reason why is, okay, I like the signings of re-signing of Benson Mayoa. I like the signing of Kerry Hyder Jr., but not as my leading tandem for my pass rush. I think that is a little too risky for my liking. We saw what Benson Mayoa looked like as your leading pass rusher, and he wasn't a bad player, but that's not his role. The moment he played as the rotational pass rusher when Carlos Dunlap came in, you saw the very best of Benson Mayoa. Kerry Hyder Jr., although was able to be a frontline player this last season, he hasn't done that on a consistent basis, Stacey. It's not like he's got 5-6 years of proven experience like Carlos Dunlap has had at that time. He's only had 2 years in his career, a 5-6 year career, where he has been able to, you know, explode and get 8 sacks. The rest of them has been 1 sacks to 0 sacks. So I love the guy. I think he came off a great year, and there's a lot to like there. But to count on him to be the number one sack getter, I don't know if I like that. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a lot of the pressure off, and like I said, it adds rotation to your mix. It makes you more diverse, and it provides your group with a variety of different ways and a variety of different players that can get after the quarterback.
Final question here. Do you think that if they don't add anything else, it'll be enough? Also, just we'll do really quickly. It's 30 past the hour, which means it's time for us to open the gates on our phone lines and qualify another listener. So call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776 in 1 minute if you're listening on a radio or 30 seconds if you're listening on the stream. We're going to take caller number two. So quick on the draw here. Call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. Caller two right now who will be entered to win the grand prize of two tickets to opening day and the right to open the gates to welcome fans back to T-Mobile Park. Your next chance to win comes in 1 hour at 2:30 with Wyman and Bob. Now, before we get to that caller there, what do you think about if they don't add anyone else? Are you feeling okay about
it? If they don't add anybody else, yes, I'm feeling okay about it. I think it'll be fine. They added Al Woods, and it wasn't in replacement of Jaron Reed, but it just adds to your depth overall at that one technique defensive tackle position. Now, what the one technique is, he's a plugger. That you are in command of the run game. You are in charge of gap control. You're not really being asked to be a tremendous pass rusher. So you're going to play on first and second down, and now you have two guys in Brian Monet that they really like, and now Al Woods that they had in 2019 that they really, really liked. Two guys that can play that role. You add depth there, but I do think they're going to add one more guy at that three technique defensive tackle position to truly back up Puna Ford. I know LJ Collier can slide down in there. I know Rasheem Green can slide down in there, but you don't necessarily want those two guys to be a full-time change to defensive tackle, because I don't think that that bodes well overall for your ability to stand up in the running game. Mm-hmm. And as a pass rush, could be unique, could be dynamic, but to hold up in the running game, I'm not so sure if I feel comfortable with that, and I think they make the change there.
Do you think adding Al Woods was at least enough to kind of like bolster with a little bit of veteran help?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think if they stood pat, I would be okay. I think that they'd be a very good pass rushing team. I would be curious to see how they do in the running game. But overall, I would feel okay with it, and I would be comfortable with it moving forward. They're in a much better position than where they've been at the past two seasons.
All right, what I need to know is coming up next. Here's how it works. You send any question you have into 710-710. Text your question, any question, even multiple questions, to 710-710. Jake and I are going to take your questions next. Curtis, do we have the caller now? Should we take him next? All right, we'll see if we can take him. Do it right now?
After the break.
After the break. All right. We'll bring on our caller after the break for the Open the Gates contest, and then we'll also take your questions. Again, text those in right now to 710-710. What I need to know coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Before we get to your questions, we got to bring on our winner for the bottom of the hour, our last winner of today's show, Christy in Snoqualmie. Christy, you have been entered into the Open the Gates contest and are officially entered in for a chance to win a pair of opening day tickets and a chance to open the gate. Tell us why you deserve to win.
I deserve to win because I've been a fan since the mid-90s when Griffey and A-Rod and Buhner and all them were playing, and I have opened my heart to them every single year and loved this team despite all their losses. So I feel really good about this year and the future, and I want to be there to start this year off right.
Christy, I can fully appreciate a fan like you.
A ride-or-die fan.
A ride-or-die fan
ride or die.
That has been through so much, and yet you continue to be there year in and year out. Definitely think that you are very deserving. Thank you for calling in, being on the gun, sharp. I hope you have the best of luck in this drawing.
Yeah, best of luck, Christy. Thank you for listening, and have a good weekend, all right?
Thank you, guys. You too. Bye.
So, yeah, that was Christy in Snoqualmie, our last winner of the day. Let's move on to some questions here for What I Need to Know. Again, you can send those in, 710-710.
I've got one here.
Oh, you do? You want to do yours first?
I've got one here.
Okay.
Okay. Would you rather be a superstar on a bad team or a role player on a good team?
Role player on a good team.
Curtis?
Oh, man. That's a really good question. Yeah, I mean,
do I take it back?
It's like one of those moral questions. Like, do you want to win and be good at your job, or do you want to be amazing at your job on a bad team?
It depends how much money you're getting.
See,
collecting that check on a bad team.
That is exactly
where
my mind
went.
But
what if your career's over and you want to ring?
Are we talking high school sports, college sports, or professional sports? Because if we're talking professional sports, it is about the money.
How about this?
If I am a average player, if I'm a role player on a good team, am I getting paid like minimum to just a little bit above, or am I getting paid a good, healthy salary? That to me is the biggest factor of it all. Because if I'm a superstar, even on a bad team, I'm Shaquille Griffin. I just got paid $14 million per year to play for the Jacksonville Jags. Yeah, I'm going to take that money. I'm sorry. Like, it is what it is. And I would love to be able to play on a good team all day, every day. But money talks.
I'm seeing role player as like your number two tight end. So you're not like a practice squad guy. Like, you're on the roster. You're just like number two or three. So you're still getting paid. You're still getting a couple million dollars.
Okay.
But the difference is like a guy like Calvin Johnson ended his career as one of the greatest to ever do it and appeared in how many postseason games? Never got a ring. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Okay. So then the texter clarifies and says no money involved. Then I'd rather be a role player on a really good team. Because that's where the memories are going to be created, and you're going to have a whole lot more fun doing your job than just being out there collecting checks and being on a bad team. But if we're keeping money involved, make no mistake, money in professional sports, just like in your profession outside of it, money's going to play a factor in this.
All right. Oh my gosh, there's so many questions. I don't know where to even go. Someone asking if we like marshmallow peeps. It was just yay or nay. We all have to. I say
nay,
yeah.
Nay.
Did you see they're coming out with marshmallow? They're coming out with peep flavored Pepsi.
Oh, ew.
Yeah.
Gross.
I don't mind them, but I'll have like one. But I do like marshmallow in things. So like chocolate covered marshmallow, bomb. Delicious. Delicioso.
Oh, man, that is way too much sugar for me. All right, here's a question.
Okay.
Who is more awesome, Jake or Stacy? Answer. They answered it themselves. Curtis Rogers, bear down.
Whoa.
Why ask the question? Why put it in there?
It's true.
It is true.
It's true.
Wow. It's very true.
How do you feel about reuniting Geno Atkins with Carlos Dunlap?
I need to do a little bit more digging on this one. On its face, Geno Atkins the name? Yeah, it'd be cool, but also on its face, Geno Atkins is coming off his worst year as a pro, and he's 32 years old. Not every single 32-year-old out there still can produce. And I know we've talked about this, and Stacey, this is near and dear to your heart with the whole age thing, but I think that this is something that you do
older.
Have to take into account. Are they over the hill? Are they not performing? Because their body is breaking down. And
okay.
Geno Atkins, I think there is a serious question about that, and you have to get the answer to.
I fell down the stairs once. Once. Curtis,
I know,
one...
but you're always advocating for players over 30.
I am. For my 80s babies. Curtis, I want you to think carefully about your answer to this one.
Here
you
we
ready?
Go.
From the 425, what's more embarrassing, responding to someone in public who isn't talking to you but who is on the phone, or responding with, "Thanks, you too," when it doesn't make sense? Like someone says at the movie theater, "Enjoy your movie," and you
I would
say, "Thanks, you too."
Thanks, you too, because the other person clearly hears you and sees you. Whereas the person on the phone probably doesn't even notice that you're trying to get their attention.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I would say the "thanks, you too"
is by far the worst. I've done it multiple times in multiple settings. I've done it at the movie theater. I have done it boarding my flight. The flight attendant, "Have a great flight.
Thanks, you too."
Thanks,
I'm
you too.
Going to be standing right here for the next
But have you guys
hours.
Ever waved at someone who wasn't? That's pretty bad, too. I find it pretty mortifying when someone's on the phone and they're talking, especially if you do a couple interactions.
Isn't that what you did with Jimmy Graham once?
No, I did it where a trainer, I was at VMAC, and Jimmy Graham, I have no idea how I couldn't hear him behind me, but we were both walking down the hallway. And there's the same hallway. If you're a reporter, you walk to the media room, but athletes are also in it to walk to the weight room or wherever they're going. And someone, like a trainer, waved. I don't know why I thought it was to me, but I'm just oblivious to it. And I wave back, and then I turn behind me, and he's actually waving to Jimmy Graham. And I swear to God, I'm not imagining this. Jimmy Graham was trying not to laugh at me. Like, because it was just so obvious. Like, the trainer looked very confused. Like, wait, who? Like, I'm not waving at you. Who are you? But I was really feeling myself in that moment. I was like, oh, hello. Yes, I am here. Hi, how are you?
Okay, serious question now.
Okay.
All right, I'm done playing around.
All right.
Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he work for NASA, SpaceX, or there's three options. It's getting really competitive in the space field.
Yeah.
There is now Space Force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which of the three? Because you never really give us a straight answer here, Stacey.
Yeah, he works for NASA because, like I said, they use his brain too. He's really smart, so he helps build rockets and flies and scares them. So, but yeah, he gets all kinds of calls from other places.
Freelance astronaut?
You know.
Just picking up odd jobs here or there.
He's got that 1099 working for him.
File your taxes.
He's a self-employed astronaut.
Contractor. Let's see what else we got here. Yeah, I'm going to say he works for NASA. I mean, I know he works for NASA. He does, for sure. That's definitely happening. Let's see. A lot of people saying they'd rather be a superstar getting paid, by the way.
The thing is that when you're a superstar, you're getting the attention, right? You're getting the endorsements, you're getting the interviews, you're getting the spotlight. So I can see why people would pick the superstar. I could definitely see that. But just being a part of successful organizations and being part of successful teams, there is something special about that. And it is so much more fun going to work when you are excited to go to work, when you know you're part of a winning team. It can be a drag. Even if you're the star, you're not with a great company, you're not with a winning team, it's not nearly as fun.
Jake, I want to squeeze in one final question here from Chris in Enumclaw. He said, how many takes did it take Jake to get his commercial correct for the Genuine Auto Glass commercial? Be honest.
Actually,
one take, Jake?
It took me two takes.
Nice!
It took me two takes.
Nice!
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's pretty solid.
And,
all right.
And, you know, it wasn't in person, so I didn't have Chip there.
To really catch off of it.
So we had Mike, our sound producer. He was trying to do the Chip voice to help me with it. It was awesome.
Wyman and Bob is coming up next. Also, your next chance to win tickets to the Open the Gate contest or be entered to win tickets comes at 2:30. This has been Jake and Stacey. Have a good weekend, you guys.